Right. Hi. I'm Cindy, compulsive overeater, recovering anorexic. Thank you for asking me to speak. What it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. I came into OA in 1994 from a treatment center for anorexia. And that's how I found out about OA. I've been abstaining from my eating disorder since 1994. It's interesting because when I came in, I wasn't thinking about like getting time or whatever. I just wanted to know how not to do it today and how not to do it tomorrow. That's all I was worried about. Also, I didn't like being afraid of everything all the time, even besides food. And working the steps and having supportive sponsor and OA friends helped a lot. To back up, when I came in, I was like a teenager, and I had thought that there was something wrong with the way I was relating to people and the way I was feeling low most of the time, like just. And not all the time, but like social scenarios, and I always kind of felt like I was like watching, like kind of not necessarily an outsider, but just like I didn't know how to ask to be let in. And people were playing or whatever. And so I think they thought I wanted to be solo. And so they kind of let me go solo. And then I thought they were rejecting me. And I think it was a misunderstanding. What this has to do with food is that I didn't know why I was feeling kind of on the outside and feeling low. And I blamed it on my body. And I thought, well, maybe if I change my body, everything else will change. And growing up, I had everything I needed materially, and I had a good family, and they cared, and they were really trying. The one thing I noticed, though, was that there were certain emotions I didn't want to see, and if you had them, you had to kind of go get rid of them. That was the way I perceived it. And go get rid of them and come back when you're presentable, kind of. And so I didn't know what to do with them if I was feeling like super low or angry or whatever, any of the quote unallowable emotions. And sometimes they were really like, sympathetic and supportive when I was feeling low, and other times it was sort of like I felt like I was getting religioned out of it or guilted out of it. Like, you have everything you need. Like, what are you? Yeah, what do you got these emotions for? Well, why did I have them? Well, because I was human, and that was something that kept coming up, was that I felt like we were kind of expected to be like better than your average bear. Like, you have everything you need. You have an, education, or you have, religion, whatever, and you don't want to make God look bad, make the church look bad, make family look bad, And so, like, it was almost like I didn't want to be like a bad PR for God or for them, and I had to protect them from people seeing my emotions. It was kind of like, I felt like there was a lot of pressure, and but I just thought that's the way it was. I didn't think it was like that there was something wrong with that. I was just like, well, it's a lot of pressure, and I had a lot of anxiety and depression growing up, and I thought it was all about me, that there was something wrong with me. Well, in the 90s, all right, five, I got it. Thanks. And I was afraid that I had just like a bad personality or something. You know, you take those personality tests, you know, when you're a kid or whatever. And my family took them and I thought there was something wrong with mine. And you know, whenever there was a problem, I just thought I did it solo, you know. You know, it being in the 90s, a lot of people, you know, where I was at school and stuff, their solution was, well, we're gonna like, you know, be having my weight be low would be the solution. And I thought, well, maybe it's not my personality, maybe it's just my body. Maybe I could just change it. And maybe when I change it, everything will be better. And I won't look like me, so then I'll be a different person and like it'll change. And I started a and you know, I started to try to change it through a rather brutal and desperate eating disorder. And I got really sick really fast. And you know, my weight wasn't high to begin with, so I wound up having problems like really fast. And you know, there's a part in the big book where it says to be gravely affected, one does not always have to drink a long time or have the quantities some of us had. And so what happened in my case was that I started getting in trouble with you know, the starvation and restriction and like you know, doctors were, you know, worried, and I got like an ultimatum, and it's like, yeah, like, oh, I need to stop. Yeah, I know, but I don't know how. And it talks about that in step one, like we know it's a problem and we don't know how to stop. That was the kind of the kind of pre step one that I had was like, oh, your life's in danger, you have to stop. Oh, yeah, okay, but you know how? I don't know. And I wound up in a treatment center. Was not my decision. That's eventually when I got abstinent and got out. I got out like a week later or something. I found out about OA, I got a sponsor really fast. The thing that I thought was amazing about them, it was at a women's meeting, was that they had a lot of peace in their eyes. And you know, most of them were older than me, and they had responsibilities that were more than mine. And I thought that the older you get, the responsibilities and the pressure just keep going up and up and up. And I couldn't even handle them as a teenager. So I thought that was great. The backpack's just going to keep getting heavier. But here there were people who actually did trust their higher power, whatever their concept of it was. It wasn't just on paper, because I knew I was supposed to be trusting higher power. The people that I was watching, like they tried to trust higher power, but or they tried to trust God, the people in my family and my church, but they were trying to do everything for God and trying to do it kind of like solo. And they were stressing out about it. And I didn't realize that like trying to do everything for God, you know, is still kind of going solo. Like I was afraid I was letting, quote, him down and all this stuff. But these people in the meeting were like, you know, it says in step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, the care of God as we understood him. And, you know, someone who would, you know, tell a teenager, like, you're not, after all I've done for you, Cindy, you're not doing enough for me. Like, in my mind, like, that's not a caring higher power. It says in step two that we had to let go of any concept about God that wasn't helping us recover from compulsive eating. And the idea that, you know, that God was basically saying, like, why aren't you trying harder? Why aren't you doing better? You owe me, you know, why aren't you saving the world? Whatever, was really just part of the disease, and it wasn't really God at all. And it was just, you know, the God of expectations. And so when I got into OA, did not have a problem with step one. Step one, admitted we were perilous over food, check, that our life had become unmanageable, double check, step two, right, check. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. All these women in the meeting that I was in, like it, it worked for them. Like the trusting their higher power and working the steps had worked for them, and they'd had longer and gnarlier stories with their disease than me, and it had worked for them. And so yes, came to believe was definitely there. And then step three, made a decision, turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Yeah, I didn't want to do it the way I'd been doing it, which was trying to use an eating disorder to kind of self-medicate out of a anxiety and depression. Like I, and the thing I had been afraid of was, I was like, well, if I get abstinent and follow the, I had this medical food plan I had to follow, and I was like, well, if I follow that, what if I just go back to looking normal and being miserable like before? And that was my fear. And and then I was like, but I can't go to point B, which is this eating disorder, because it's killing me. So I can't go to back to point A. I can't go to point B. What's option C? And the option C was to work the steps. And all the emotions that I thought were such a problem, before, that's what step four through nine deals with. And all that stuff that was going on down below that made me want to make a desperate and self-destructive decision with food, like that's step four through nine, helps deal with them. And the idea that I was allowed to be human and have emotions, that came up also in step four. When I did my first inventory, my sponsor was really gentle and caring, and I kind of realized I was allowed to be human. I didn't like that I had like what people call character flaws, like pride or whatever. I was really afraid that that being prideful or finding out that I was meant that I was somehow God's enemy and I was gonna get it, like I was gonna get punished. And then I found out everybody had it, and I was like, oh good. And that I wasn't the only one who had the character defects, and that it wasn't a terrible thing to have them. You just give them to higher power and work on not using them. And step five, reading my fourth step to my sponsor. I mean, every time I've done a fourth or fifth step, things have gotten a lot better. I've done a few of them, and it gets a lot of the old ideas out of the way that were kind of running the show, especially fear and low self-esteem, and of course resentment too. But yeah, so four and five really helped me out a lot. Six and seven, again, with having mistakes and flaws, like of course I have them. I mean, I'm human, but I didn't have any acceptance about having them, and I thought I wasn't supposed to have them, or at least I wasn't supposed to have them where anyone could see. And again, I thought like it would, I was kind of taught that if I had them in front of other people, it would make my church look bad and it would make God look bad and all this stuff. And it's like, no, it would just look like I have them. Like it wasn't as major as they were making it sound. Not that I want to use them and hurt myself or someone else, but it wasn't as grandiose. Like, okay, I've got them. All right, what do we do with them? Give them to higher power, and higher power will balance them. And I liked where it basically said that a character flaw is basically a good instinct that just got cranked to 11. Like I had a friend in OA who said they just got cranked to 11. And that sometimes higher power doesn't need to get rid of them, just needs to balance them back to the way it was supposed to be. And I kind of liked that, because I thought, instincts, I just wasn't supposed to have them, which for the kind of eating disorder I had, makes sense. I was trying to get rid of instincts that everybody was supposed to have. And It's step nine, eight and nine, and making amends. I liked that there was a step nine because I thought if I made a mistake, that was just the end. If I said the wrong thing to somebody, it was just the end. So I better never say anything but mistake. Well, how do I know what I'm saying? All right, 15, got it. Thanks. But what was I saying a minute ago? Anyway, no, making amends. Yeah, I didn't know you could clean it up. I thought that just even if you apologized, that was just the end, and you just don't make mistakes, or you'll lose your friend, or you'll lose your, whatever job, whatever. Like, you just lose them, and so you can't ever say anything. Just, you have to watch it 100% of the time. And it's like, I do try really hard not to say anything that's hurtful to people, but it's not because I think I'm going to immediately lose them. It's because I don't want to hurt them. And step nine, like the idea that you can clean it up and be like, okay, wow, that's not what I meant. I'm sorry I said that or whatever. And that you can clean up a mistake in a friendship or a relationship. I didn't know you could do that. So that was actually really good. Step 10, taking inventory. Obviously, I had emotions and but situations that I wasn't dealing with when I came in. I'm in my 40s. So obviously what I had, I have to take inventory on what comes up, because, there's different situations, and I need to turn over situations in my life that I didn't have in the beginning. So like step three has to be like a recurring thing for me. And then step 11, prayer and meditation. I try to pray the step three and step seven prayer every day, and it helps, especially before work. Helps me get kind of focused and not as stressed out. Meditation, I haven't done as much, but it's something that I need. And I feel like I'm closest to my higher power when I'm really in the moment. Like, I teach music to kids, and so to see them like singing and having fun and stuff like that, sometimes I feel like that's a form of meditation too. And also the way that I feel about my kindergartners or whatever is, I feel like maybe that's the way higher power would feel about me or about us. Like, a kindergartner makes a mistake, and I'm not like, be gone, kindergartner. Like, that's the end. You're not in my class anymore. Like, you can't play drums, whatever. Like, I wouldn't do that to them. And I know higher power wouldn't do that to me either. It kind of helped them to like redirect what it is that they did. And yeah, no, we don't throw things in here or whatever. But like, I don't have to like condemn them. And I don't think higher power condemns me either or us. And step 12, when I came in, a lot of people helped me out. I didn't have transportation. I had people, sponsors and stuff drive me to meetings. I needed to make a lot of outreach calls, like a bunch of them. And people were there for me, carrying the message. And I realized I wasn't solo, and I didn't have to feel like the outsider, and that we were all, equal, worth the same. And and I always, remember the hope that they gave me, and want to pay it forward. Thanks for letting me share, and I pass.